Let not your heart be troubled. You are listening to the Sean Hannity Radio Show podcast.
This is the Sean Hannity Show, and obviously I'm not Sean. You probably picked up right away. This is Louis Gohmert. I am the lowly legislator from the state of Texas, and I am honored to be here sitting in for my dear friend Sean Hannity. It is, some people have asked, why would you do radio? Hey, that's part of the job. Of course, ethics doesn't allow me to accept anything, and Sean says his company loves that. But that's the way it is. And I'm telling you, I'm hearing from so many people, and I know you're out there. You're fired up. This has been a decent year. We got some things accomplished that needed to be accomplished. And even though the tax bill that was passed, polls are showing it wasn't all that popular, it will be. And we have confidence. We spent more time working on the tax bill than we did talking about how great it was. That we'll leave that to the Democrats. But people will feel the difference. And it's going to make a difference for individuals. And it kind of gets me to hear Democrats saying, what's $1,000 or $2,000 to, you know, middle-class America? You know, this is no big deal. Wow, the arrogance of that. It's a big deal to most of us. And when it stops being a big deal, it means either inflation has run away or the people that are talking about it are just too far detached from the American people. And I know that's not you, not in Sean Hannity's audience. But we've got a big stack of things we need to get done this year. Top on my plate is not DACA. I will continue to make clear that until the border is secure and the wall is built everywhere we need it, we don't need to be talking about any kind of legality, amnesty, whatever you want to call it. Let's don't talk about it. Let's get it done, get the wall built where we need it, get the border secured, and then we can talk about it. Because my friends on the border, I get texts, I get word, they're saying, you know, we had a huge drop-off in people coming into the country, but as the talk of DACA has been coming back, that maybe it becomes a reality, people are surging back in, and it's overwhelming our Border Patrol folks again. And that's something that we have got to get done. We've got to address that, and thank God we elected a president who's made clear that was something he is going to make sure we take care of. So I'm excited. We have a show today. It's a special edition, and that's compliments of Linda. Linda says, it's a special edition of the Hannity Show, where we'll feature several of the members of the House Freedom Caucus to discuss the serious and pressing issues facing the American people. The House Freedom Caucus supports open, accountable, limited government, the Constitution, and the rule of law, and policies that promote liberty, safety, and prosperity of all Americans. Unlike the people that have been at the top of the Justice Department, we're not as concerned about what party you're in as we are getting liberty for everybody. And if you want to take away people's liberty, as people in the last administration wanted to, then I'm sorry, that is not what we want to see done. And I know I just saw on Fox News that the voting had been certified in Alabama. But I know this has been talked about a great deal, and some people have asked, why did you go to Alabama to help Roy Moore? Look, I met him back when I was a district judge, a felony judge, like he had been at one time. And I was impressed with his principles. And when the declarations came out by women allegedly 38 years afterwards, 4 weeks before the election, one thing I know, and folks, you're listening to a guy who has sentenced many people to life in prison for what they did to women. You know, having three daughters and a wife, I care deeply about what happens to women. But, and I've even sentenced to death for what one guy did to a woman. And I had no problems in doing that. I take it seriously. But I also take due process seriously. And in fact, I may be the only member of Congress that's ever appealed a death sentence. I had no problem with capital punishment. I wrote a paper that a very liberal socialist professor gave me an A on, but back in college days. I've always felt there is a place for capital punishment if the circumstances are right. But as I told the highest court in Texas when I argued this guy's case, I believe in capital punishment. But in order to have punishment, you have got to make sure due process is accorded and afforded, and in this case it wasn't. And I saw, folks, there's a reason we have statutes of limitation where you cannot make claims against someone in court after a certain length of time under in criminal courts. You can't. They're barred by limitations. You got murder, you got treason. There's a few things that don't have limitations. But in a civil case, if you want to sue somebody for an assault, sexual or otherwise, there are limitations on when a claim can be made. And why is that? Because we have evolved in our justice system to where we saw if you wait too long to make a claim, then a person cannot adequately defend themselves. I mean, if somebody made a claim against me, you did something 38 years ago. Well, I know I was at Fort Benning, Georgia, in what they call this man's army. I don't know if I'd been sent TDY, temporary duty, to some other post. I've been sent to a lot of posts. I don't know where I was on a given day, and the Army doesn't know. I tried to get some of my records back years ago. They don't have the picture. They don't have anything. They've got my honorable discharge. They don't have my honors and stuff. But anyway, they got nothing. How could you prove where you were at a time that something is alleged specifically 38 years ago? So all you can do is start taking apart the stories that are given, and there's not time to do that in 4 weeks. So it was pretty clear what was happening was, you know, a personality assassination. And, in sexual assault cases, we're very strict in what evidence we will allow a jury to hear. There is an exception. There are a few exceptions, but one is that we let the jury know how quickly a person who contends she or he was sexually assaulted, how quickly they made an outcry. And then I'd have to hear evidence. Was it a legitimate outcry, or is this just somebody in the family that's trying to help out with the story, but they really don't? And then you look to that and see what the credibility is. Those are big deals. And when you have stories that start breaking down where you have fraud in saying that an autograph took place, or somebody said, yeah, he used to call me. I was 14. He'd call me on my phone in my room, and it turns out she didn't have a phone in her room. They didn't have a cell phone. They didn't have a cord that reached to her room. So, okay, you lied about that. What else are you lying about? You've got to have time to break down stories, and I knew there was not time. And all I could think about was Harry Reid after he lied about Mitt Romney and said, you know, gee, Romney didn't pay taxes for all these years. Turned out it was a lie. When he was asked about it later after the election, all he had to say was, well, we won, didn't we? You know, that's the way some people in this country look at it. Not truth, not justice, not the American way. The old test from Superman of years ago. Truth, justice, and the American way. Yeah, I used to dress up, had the cape, the whole thing. But I love Superman. He was fighting for what was right. You know, I was quoted in Dallas Morning News when I was 6 years old as saying, when I grow up, I want to be a fine Christian sheriff. And I didn't think it was funny. I never could understand why anybody thought that was worth printing. But anyway, it's truth. It's justice. It's the American way. But when you hit somebody up 38 years afterwards, and you know they don't have time. We don't know how long the Washington Post sat on this story, but clearly this is a tactic of the left. Wait and ambush when they can't defend themselves, and I have a feeling there's somebody out there. I mean, wouldn't it bear at least getting into the question, gee, if McConnell would spend $30 million trying to take down Roy Moore And the Democrats would spend 50, 60, 70, whatever they spent trying to take him down. Is it beyond the pale of at least asking and investigating? Did somebody make some money off this thing? You know, if they've spent $60, $70 million, $100 million jointly to try to win a race, and it's very, very clear no one was going to beat Roy Moore on the Democratic side of the ticket until these allegations came, would it be worth investing in the allegations? I don't know. But these are questions that need to be asked. And I understand that the judge is filing suit over the election. Well, I hope something that he files is a libel slander case. Those are such tough cases. I mean, I got like the Longview paper. There's no question. We've got all kinds of malice that we could prove. But it's amazing that you have newspapers having to have a tough time making it. But and then you have a paper like that that panders to the 25% that vote against me in general elections. But I can't prove any damages. I've got the malice evidence. I've got everything. But if I win with 75% of the vote, despite what they're trying to manipulate the public to believe, then it's kind of hard to show any damages. So I don't have damages. Maybe someday there'll be some damages, but they're not. Roy Moore has real damages. His personality's been destroyed by these allegations. But what really bothered me, too, was how many people in office, Republican and Democrat, said, well, you know, he's a child molester. This would be a blot on the Senate, whatnot. Wait, didn't you believe in due process at one time? Really? You would take a guy who's been, regardless of whether you agree or disagree with his position on the Ten Commandments, it was the position in this country for at least a century and a half that the Ten Commandments were an important building block of making a great country. You know, if he had lived 50, 60 years ago, there would be statues to him. What a great hero. But he's got damages, and I hope something's done about it. But we're going to come back. We got a great year ahead of us coming up. We don't mess it up. It's going to be great, and you're going to hear about it. We've got Dave Bratt, my friend from Virginia, Freedom Caucus member, as well as Randy Weber of Texas, going to be back with us. And we'll look for your calls, 800-941-7326, 800-941-SEAN. This is Louie Gohmert sitting in for my friend Sean Hannity, a real American hero. He is for me. What a great guy. We're going to take some calls and see what some of the folks are talking about. But let me mention this. Before I was going on the bench, a judge that I'd tried cases in front of, he was always fair, Democrat, but he was always a very fair man. And he was dying of cancer, and he said, Louie, being a judge is a great job. It's a lonely job because a lot of your friends you can't hang around with anymore because it would look bad because they're going to be litigating in front of you. But this stuff that people say about not having any bias is ridiculous. Every human being has bias. But you've got to recognize what your biases are, because this is the justice system. And for there to be justice, you have to recognize your biases and you have to avoid letting them affect what you do from the bench. And it's that same thing's true in DOJ. And then when I was asking some questions of Rosenstein, the deputy AG, about have you seen political bias in this person, that person, some on the left went nuts, always demanding a political litmus test. No. It is important that we know whether or not people's political opinions is affecting what they did. And I worked very hard to make sure that as a judge, I was fair and I was just regardless. And that meant some people that were begging me as supporters not to send somebody to prison that should have gone, they didn't get their way. It didn't matter to me if they were supporters. It didn't matter if they were rich or poor. We were going to do what was right. And that's what's been lacking in this Justice Department. We knew the IRS was weaponized under Obama in 2011 and 12, but we didn't know, as Newt Gingrich has said, he told Sean, we didn't know how bad things were until Trump won. And if Hillary had won, we would never have known. But let's go to Amy in Colorado. How are you, Amy?
Hi, Mr. Gohmert.
Yes, just Louie. It's great talking to you. Well, this says that you had an issue about the double standard in the system of justice between Trump and Hillary. What did you notice?
Well, I just noticed that, Hillary is seemingly above the law. She obviously broke the law but got away with it. And there's no screaming for an investigation, whereas there's no evidence that Trump colluded with the Russians, and yet they're investigating every aspect of his life. And also, there's a double standard with the sexual allegations, too, with Roy Moore and Al Franken.
No kidding.
Al Franken probably could have gotten away without resigning.
Yeah, he probably could. You're so right. I'm getting the buzz. We've got 10 seconds, 5 seconds. But, Amy, thanks so much to listening to Hannity program. We'll be right back with Dave Bratt and Randy Weber. You keep listening. We'll talk to you soon. This is the Sean Hannity Show. This is Louie Gohmert, member of Congress from the great state of Texas, sitting in for him. And we've got a couple of great guests on for this half hour. You hear from Mark Meadows and Jim Jordan, the current chairman and the past chairman of the House Freedom Caucus. You hear from them all the time. Well, we're going to hear from some folks you don't hear from all the time, but it really is an incredible group of Americans. They care about their country. Randy Weber is a member of Congress from Texas. His district suffered a great deal from the hurricanes. But take you back to the summer of 2015. We had tried very hard in January to get up to 29 Republicans who would vote for anybody besides John Boehner. We knew if everybody was voting and we had 29 Republicans vote for somebody else, Pelosi could not be Speaker. She couldn't get a majority. And it would throw it to a second ballot. And we knew that anybody that announced they were running, like me, would never be elected. But if we could get enough to get us up to 29, we'd get to a second ballot. There would be an emergency conference called, and they would yell at those of us that 29 or so that had voted beside someone besides Boehner. And at that conference, they'd say, we'd say, fine, it's you can say whatever you want to, but we're going to keep voting for somebody else like they did back in the 1920s for 9 ballots until they got what they wanted. And why don't we compromise on somebody else being Speaker? But so we were a little disillusioned. We got to 24, but most people thought we'd never get past 9, where we were stuck for 3 weeks until it was Jim Bridenstine and Thomas Massie's idea. Why don't you announce? And then that takes away the excuse a lot of people get. Oh, I'd vote for anybody but Boehner if somebody would announce. You announce, that takes that away. So by July, though, we knew when we got 24 that the time was coming. He wasn't going to make a full 2 years, most of us believe, because we'd pick up enough to create a problem. And so in July, there were some of us sitting around speculating. Somebody said, I think he will probably resign in January. That's 25 full years in Congress. And others say, no, I don't think he'll make it to August. And I said, no, he'll make it through August because the Pope is coming the end of September, and he has been wanting to get the Pope here. He's Catholic. There is no way he would resign before the Pope comes, but I think when the Pope comes, you'll see him resign pretty shortly after that. That's what happened. Pope came the next day, he resigned. But Randy, when I said, I think Pope comes and he resigns, Randy Weber said, so Louie, what you're telling us is you think we're going to have Pope and change. And I said, yes, Randy, we're going to have Pope and change. And we did. Dave Bratt, I cannot describe him as well as Laura Ingraham did in her book, Billionaire at the Barricades. Totally recommend it. Great book. But she said, referred to Bratt's brainy fearlessness. Tan with his sandy brown hair combed back and wire-rimmed glasses, Bratt had the look of an all-American prepster. His smile was real and reassuring. More than the average politician, Bratt understood the urgent need to disrupt the old GOP hierarchy. So, Hannity audience, welcome Dave Bratt, Congressman of Virginia, and Randy Weber of Texas, two congressional heroes of mine. Welcome to the Hannity Show.
Yeah, hey, great to be on, Louis. Thanks so much.
Well, hey, guys, Dave, you know, you were a professor teaching economics. Let's go to the tax bill that just got passed. Can you name off some things that people are going to see a change for the better as a result?
Yeah, I mean, the biggest thing, the most important thing in all of human history is economic growth. People forget all of human history. People basically were in poverty for all of human history until about 1776. And then the great American experiment took off, and so we got to keep that experiment alive. And so that's what we did in the tax bill. Wages have been flat for 30 to 40 years. So the average person back home gets that. Up in the swamp, we got cranes all over the place building high-rises for rich, you know, yeah, the cronies.
Right.
But that's the number one most important thing is we're generating economic growth. We're already at 3%. And then on top of economic growth.
Oh, by the
growth,
way, let's point out, it wasn't Obama's 8 years the only time a president has been in office that they didn't hit 3% growth?
Exactly. And that resulted, you know, not only in President Trump, but Bernie was running on that, right? The economic populism part. Even the Democrats realized, hey, whatever we got, it's not working, and we want to change, and we, you know, the cronies are taking care of themselves, but they're not taking care of the American people. So the most important part is the growth, and then we gave capital back to business, right, immediate expensing, and that's the number one source of growth. And then out of growth, your kid is going to have multiple job offerings out there, right? It's very hard for your kid to even find a job right now. A lot of people left the workforce.
That's
and then on
point.
Top of that, everybody's going to get some money back. Single mom's going to get over $1,000 back. A family of four making $70,000 is going to get $2,059 back.
Doesn't it get you that the Democrats say that's no big deal? You know, that's a big deal to people. That's a really big deal.
Huge deal.
Well, let me bring Randy in. Randy, you know, from what you're hearing, and I know your district got hammered with the hurricane, but as I understand it, a lot of your constituents, my constituents, don't understand how good this is going to be because of the demagoguery of the other side. But how can you reassure your constituents that this is going to be good for them?
Well, I thank you, Louis, for having us. And David, welcome. We're glad you're here with us. That's a great question, Louis, and I will tell you that David is exactly on track. Anytime you give the American people their money back, they know what to do with it. Yes, a lot of people are hearing the hammering away of the left. It's just unbelievable. They've still got the, you know, throw grandma over the cliff kind of scenario going on, that the Republicans are doing a number on the middle class, doing a number on the old people, going to do a number on Social Security, going to do a number on Medicare, and just on and on and on trying to use the fear factor. Mm. Most of the people in my district that are paying attention, especially since they're business-minded, of course, I owned an air conditioning company for 35 years, sold it last July. Most of the people who are paying attention to conservative, what we would call our values from the Republican Party platform of 2016, who are paying attention and understand how we don't need a bigger government and control of our money. We need a smaller government, giving people their money back to spend, invest in the economy. They get it. There are a number of people, though, Louis, who are frightened by what the left demagoguery has been. So they're watching very closely.
Yep. Well, Dave, you know, I love the dimension you bring to Freedom Caucus meetings with your economic background. John Kenneth Galbraith, I didn't agree with much of anything he said or wrote, except that he said there are two kinds of economists, those who don't know and those who don't know they don't know. But you always struck me as somebody that really gets it. But Steve Moore used to be with Wall Street Journal. He said he loved the way I described the corporate tax. People are told, oh, don't worry, that's the rich, greedy people that pay that corporate tax. No, corporations, if they don't recoup it from the individuals, their customers, then they don't stay in business. So that 35% corporate tax it has been the largest tariff that any country puts on its own goods and services. It does hurt our competition around the world, our competitiveness around the world. So what do you see happening dropping that to 21%?
Well, I see what we. Go ahead, David.
Yeah. I mean, I just see what we have, right? The market has already had 60 or 70 of its all-time highs. We're growing at 3% right now. The Federal Reserve says we're going to grow at 4% coming up. The only problem we have is we're living in Orwellian times for real, right?
Yeah,
JFK, right. The great Democrat president, did what we just did. And it's amazing that we have to defend ourselves for doing what Kennedy said would lift all boats. And you got a huge growth spurt under Kennedy and under Reagan. And so we do the same thing Kennedy does, and the left goes apoplectic when Obama proposed a corporate rate change 10 years ago. And so, I mean, it really is amazing. We're sitting here trying to just explain common sense. You don't have to. The American people are going to feel it. In 1 month, they're going to get bigger paychecks, and it's game over.
Yeah. Randy, do you see that as being a threat to Democrats, that people start noticing that they're doing better this year?
Well, absolutely. We've had 8 years of failed economic policies. We've had the lowest recovery rate, growth rate, as David pointed out. In the last 70 or 80 years, however long it's been, they're going to see more in their paychecks. They're going to understand the hypocrisy of Democrats who are making the claim. They're decrying the fact that these corporations want to go overseas, but they also want to keep the corporate tax rate at an all-time high. You can't have it both ways. We want to be competitive with all these countries around the world. We want to keep those corporations here, those manufacturing jobs here. We want to produce more jobs. And this bill's going to do that, and as people see that, you know, they're going to start seeing the hypocrisy of the demagoguery of the
Democrats. Easy for you to say.
I absolutely agree with that, and people are going to see them for what they are. Just a matter of time.
Well, look, we've got to take a break right now, but can y'all, both of y'all, hold on, and we'll come back and take your calls at 800-941-7326. Call in and talk to me, Louie Gohmert, or my brothers Dave Bratt or Randy Weber. 800-941-SEAN. We'll be right back. This is the Sean Hannity Show, and I am here with Dave Bratt, congressman from Virginia, and Congressman Randy Weber of Texas. Let's go to the phone lines. Tim in Mississippi, thank you for listening to the Sean Hannity Show.
Well, thank you, Louie, and thank you for all you've done since you've been in Washington.
You're very kind.
Well, call.
Well, sure. Well, I understand you have a specific question about the tax law.
Well, I do. I've been a CPA for long enough to understand what real tax reform is, and the last real tax reform we had in this country was Tepper 1986 under Ronald Reagan.
That's right.
This in no way is tax reform. This is just peeling around the edges and trying to placate people. And I think we needed a tax cut. There's no question. This is a tax cut. But one of the things, and I have voted for one Democrat in my life. In 1976, I was young and stupid, and I voted for Jimmy Carter. Okay, so it's not like I am a Democrat or a leftist. Sure. But the Republicans completely controlled this tax bill. And we talk a lot about hypocrisy and demagoguery, and the Republicans had it within their power to get rid of the most unconscionable aspect of current tax law, and that is the carried interest provision. $1.8 billion a year is the tax savings to very high-income people who have ordinary income reclassified as capital gains. That in itself is bad enough, because every dollar of that $1.8 billion that should be coming out of their pockets is coming out of people who go to work every morning at 8 o'clock and work until 6 or 7 o'clock every night.
Well,
and that's unconscionable. So the Republicans should have done something about that.
Well,
the question is really this. Was the carried interest provision, was that required in order to get McClain and Lindsey Graham and Murkowski and the rest of the leftists that call themselves Republicans to stay on board? Or are the Republicans no different than the Democrats, and all they're interested
Dave Bratt, do you have an answer?
Yeah, well, I think he should join us in Congress. He sounds right on the money. President Trump said he wanted to get rid of that, so that tells you the answer is political. And then your overarching point in terms of tax reform, we do have Congress, but basically the definition of the swamp is spending, right? That's the one thing that has not changed ever and has changed this year as well. And so you can't do fundamental tax reform unless you are willing to take a crack at the spending problem we have up in D.C. And so, unfortunately, we did not get there. This year, we're promising to look at some of the entitlements, welfare reform, et cetera. But the other comments, I think you're spot on.
Randy, you have a comment?
Well, absolutely, Tim is right. The problem's over in the Senate. You know, you're going to hear the Democrats decry the fact that the tax provisions for individuals weren't made permanent, which they will be extended, just like the Bush tax cuts. But what you're seeing is a Senate where it takes 60 votes to get things done. The Democrats would not work with this at all. So they had to trifle around the edges. They had to get people over in the Senate to agree to things, to vote for things that otherwise in the House, especially the Freedom Caucus, the House Freedom Caucus, we would not agree to. But we understand that the Senate is the problem. There's a number of them, Louis, that you know this, that don't support President Trump. And so that they need to be supporting Trump. They need to be on President Trump's agenda. They need to be doing what the American public elected them to do.
Yeah, Tim, you're very perceptive. And I'm grateful to Dave and Randy for being on with us. We got a hard break coming up. And Tim, man, thank you for paying such close attention. Apparently you were exactly right. It's a shame what we had to do to cater to the Senate to get a bill actually passed. But it's a start. Some of us are not going to let it in here. But you'll come on back. We've got a great show ahead. You're going to love it. This is the Sean Hannity Show. Call in 800-941-7326. I'm Louie Gohmert. This is the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louie Gohmert. Obviously not Sean. Don't have that beautiful notes emanating from my mouth like he does. But anyway, I'm proud to be here and glad you're listening as well. You're going to learn something because we've got some great guests. All the guests that we're having are from the Freedom Caucus. Mark Meadows, Jim Jordan are fantastic. They just do an awesome job. And I'm thrilled to have them as not just friends, but very close friends. But you're going to hear from some folks during the course of the show that you don't hear from as much. Now, Andy Biggs of Arizona has been on the news. I caught Andy this morning on Fox again because he's saying all the right things. And so it's a good thing to get him out. And Matt Gaetz from Florida has been saying a lot of the right things. So you've seen some of Matt lately, but I'm thrilled to have them on. And before we get too far past the tax bill we were talking about in the last, let me just do a shout out to Kevin Brady. I think he did a great job negotiating with the Senate. It was not easy. And heck, we had a repeal of the Johnson Amendment. We didn't talk about it. It was in the House version that passed, repealed the Johnson Amendment that prevented charitable organizations from being involved in politics at all, and changed American history dramatically after the huge role that churches played in the first part. But anyway, but it didn't make it through the Senate. That was one of those things that ended up being left in the trash heap. But Matt Gaetz and Andy Biggs and I have all been involved and questioning a lot about what's been going on at the Justice Department. And I just have been staggered, as Newt Gingrich said, we didn't know how bad things were until Trump won. And if Hillary won, we would have never known the kind of things that we're finding out. Matt, I mean, it's really been an eye-opener for all of us. We're on the Judiciary Committee together, and what's your thought about how did it strike you as we got in deeper and deeper and we found out more and more about how the DOJ had been weaponized?
Well, you're absolutely right, Louie, and it's great to be on. Great to hear you, my friend. I've been missing our talks, and now we get to share your mentorship of me with 14 million Americans.
That's
so
awesome.
What a special thing. Louie has not only helped me and my service in the Congress, but a number of the newer members look to Louie for conservative leadership and guidance. And hey, man, I got to say it. It's absolutely the truth. This is Hannity Radio, baby. We got to tell the truth.
I'm telling you, though, you have been actually quite an inspiration to me. You come in, you're ready to take on anybody that's disrupting the country, and I love it. I love it. I'm glad you're there. You know, but I'm telling you, you had to have been shocked, Matt, when we started getting answers to some of our questions about what had been going on in the last 4 years at the DOJ.
I was, and I think the threshold moment in all of this, Louie, was when Congressman Andy Biggs and Jim Jordan and yourself and Mike Johnson of Louisiana and I came together and said, we are tired of the Democrats telling lies to the American people that it was Donald Trump colluding with Russia. To this day, there is no evidence of that whatsoever. And so we started pointing out the truth, that it was actually the DNC making payments to a company that, by the way, was employing a senior DOJ official's wife to then go and pay Russians to tell lies about President Trump. And when we did that the first time in the Judiciary Committee, and we said, we're done playing defense, we're going to start playing offense, I think everything turned around. And today, Louie, 54% of the American people, according to a Harvard poll, so you know it's got to be better than that, but 54% according to a Harvard poll agree with you and I, agree with Andy Biggs, that the Mueller investigation is riddled with conflicts of interest. And my belief is that an investigation that is conflicted could never result in any meaningful prosecution. I mean, your time on the bench would, I think, inform a lot of our listeners that if you've got bad motives and bad people and bad facts surrounding the reasons why people are persecuting someone, you could never get a conviction in a circumstance like that. It would be a defense lawyer's dream. And so I'm glad we've been able to tell the truth about the conflicts of interest at the FBI and Department of Justice, about the extent to which those folks were absolutely pulling for Hillary Clinton to win. I mean, Andrew Weissman, who's the number two to Mueller, actually went to the Hillary Clinton non-victory party. And if she had won, they'd all gotten big jobs and big promotions, and they'd have been able to do whatever they wanted, and we would have never known about Uranium One. We would have never known about the Fusion GPS dossier paid for by Democrats.
Well, and by the way, those prior cases that involved Uranium One, where we had an undercover agent, I say we, the FBI was using an undercover person. It wasn't, I guess, an agent, but they had somebody on the inside. And Rosenstein, Deputy Attorney General Rosenstein's name is right there, or he goes by Rosenstein. His name was right there on the motion to seal all those records, and the judge signed off. All right, you want them sealed. And so we can't see some of the records or any of the records from those cases that were sealed that involved the Russia One investigation. But, Andy, I think both you and Matt have come to Congress after Mueller went off as FBI director. Isn't that right?
That's correct, Louis.
Yeah, so you never had a chance to question Mueller. But when back first of the year when Jeff Sessions was talked into recusing himself because he said he was advised by all of the career guys. Well, I didn't realize that these career guys he put a lot of stock in were such hard-driving Democrats that had a political agenda, just like James Comey did when he talked John Ashcroft into recusing himself so that Comey could get his best friend back then, a dear friend at least, a godfather of one of his kids, Patrick Fitzgerald, appointed as special prosecutor back then. But so when Mueller was appointed, and we had all these Republican leaders saying, oh, that's great, he'll be fair. And we still got some that are saying, oh, he'll be nonpartisan. That's garbage. This guy has been a problem. He destroyed the FBI. He ran off thousands of years of experience because he wanted nothing but young yes men. He couldn't stand the truth. He couldn't handle the truth. And so he ran folks off that had more experience that could have helped him avoid some of the pitfalls he got the FBI into. And then you look at things like he had been involved in railroading Ted Stevens. He was the FBI director when that debacle happened. And somebody from the Justice Department, FBI, should have gone to prison for what they did to Ted Stevens. Totally created a case where none exist, kept all of the evidence away from him, and so he couldn't defend himself. And then they convict him the week before the election. He loses by a few thousand votes. and then he dies 17 months later in a plane crash he wouldn't have been in if he had been reelected. So, then we don't want to forget the anthrax case. Bush even called Mueller and Comey to his office, we had to report, and said, are you sure this is the guy? Because it really doesn't, there doesn't seem to be any evidence. Mueller assured him he was the guy. This was the guy. No evidence other than when the guy they were going after reached down and petted the dogs. They said, well, the dog may have alerted, so that's why we think he's, there was no evidence. And they went after the wrong guy and destroyed his life. Mueller doesn't mind destroying lives unfairly. But so what do you have, Andy, to tell the American people about what you've learned about the Justice Department that needs fixing?
Well, first of all, Louis, I just want to say that it is an honor to be with you today and honored to serve with you. You're a conservative's conservative. There's no doubt about it. And then also, it's a great honor to serve with Matt and Jim. And I will tell you what, friends, you've got some people who are unafraid with Matt Gaetz and Louis Gohmert and Jim Jordan and the Freedom Caucus, because we're willing to get in there and fight the fight and mix it up. And so let me tell you what astonishes me, and it astonishes me yet, is that people are saying that Robert Mueller, we should leave him alone because he's a war hero. Well, I don't dispute he's a war hero, but what he's done here is he has exhibited incredible, at bare minimum, negligence, and I think it's far greater than that. He has done no vetting of his team, and this team is so biased. There's such a conflict of interest there that there is little chance that anybody is going to get a fair investigation. So when Matt starts talking about some of these people like Weinstein, these people were donors to the Democrats, but not little donors. I mean, it's okay to be a Democrat or a Republican and be an agent, but when you are unfairly biased, then it gives the appearance of corruption in the highest aspects of our Department of Justice.
But what got you and Matt and all of us motivated was we saw the evidence of that bias.
Yeah.
That's what there's not supposed to be. Your political positions are not supposed to affect your job when your job is justice. And
right, you're not supposed to come in with a predetermined outcome. And that's what they came in with. The problem for them is they can't even really manufacture the evidence. They've exceeded their scope. They were supposed to determine if there was Russian collusion or Trump collusion with the Russians in the election. They're far beyond that now. And they're trying to come up with these charges just so they can leverage people to try to come up with basically a fake case. And that's what we see here. It's outrageous. And until Attorney General Sessions goes in and starts clearing out these upper management long-term hub of the spokes. These guys are the hubs of the spokes. Rosenstein, Mueller, Comey, McCabe. These guys are the hubs of that spoke that is controlling these directed outcomes for political reasons. And the first thing was to exonerate Hillary Clinton, which they manufactured that. And then the second thing is to come in and try to delegitimize and, if possible, bring criminal charges against the President of the United States.
Matt, what was
outrage?
Yeah. Matt, let me ask you, what did you see as the biggest outrage? There are just so many to choose from.
Well, when my constituents saw emails from Andrew McCabe saying that Hillary Clinton was going to be getting special treatment, that she got a headquarters special, that it wouldn't be the normal process that any other American would face who deals with classified information, they were outraged. You know, Louie and Andy, you guys know that I represent a very heavy military district where my constituents have to deal with classified information as part of their daily lives, and they all know how serious that is. And the notion that you have someone in the senior level of our government saying that someone's going to get special treatment because they are a candidate for president, it really erodes our sense that there is a rule of law that applies equally to everyone. So I would say that evidence was smoking gun evidence of disparate treatment for Hillary Clinton. And then when you saw the very people, like Peter Strzok, migrate from the Clinton investigation over to the Mueller probe, I think you start to see a very clear picture of the coordination going on to support Hillary Clinton and to undermine the duly elected president.
Now getting thrown out of office is what they're trying. We got a hard break. I hope y'all both can hang on, and we'll be back. And Wade, we're going to take your question when you come back. God bless you. You've been hanging on from Vermont. We'll be with you when we come back. This is the Sean Hannity Show. This is the Sean Hannity Show. This is Louis Gohmert sitting in, and I have guests, Freedom Caucus fellow members, Matt Goetz and Andy Biggs. Well, let's go to Wade. You have a question. Thank you. You've got patience. Unbelievable, Wade, in Vermont. What's your question for us?
Hey, Mr. Gohmert, I appreciate you.
Well, thanks, Wade.
Calling. I always like it when you fill in for Sean. But, you know, everyone I know was so excited when President Trump was elected that we might see the swamp drained. And
in Vermont, they were all excited.
Sessions is up to the job. You know, do you think we will ever see any indictments for Uranium One, the Clinton Foundation, pay for play? And then the second part of my question is, do you think we'll ever see a bill put forward for term limits?
Matt, you want to take the first part of that question? Andy, you can come back on the next.
Sure. If we gave, you know, Louis Gohmert and a few of us on the Judiciary Committee indictment power, we'd be real dangerous. Right now, that power lies with the Department of Justice. And the fear I have is that our Attorney General, while he's doing great work on immigration and great work on free speech on college campuses, is not giving the bribes and the risk created by the corruption at the Clinton Foundation the attention that it absolutely deserves. And so we, Louis Gohmert and Andy Biggs and Jim Jordan and about 20 members of the House Judiciary Committee signed a letter to the Attorney General saying we want a second special counsel to evaluate the Clinton Foundation and the real risk that we may have in this country going forward if we don't find out who was bribed and what they did. And so we've called for that. Unfortunately, the Attorney General has not agreed with us, and we keep making the case each and every day to the American people that this is essential to draining the swamp. I don't believe the American people will trust that we have truly drained the swamp until we address the corruption that was clearly evident in the Clinton Foundation.
We're down to 15 seconds.
From Arizona.
But, Andy, you think we'll have term limits? I'd like to see it.
Yeah, Louis, I just want to address something Matt said.
We just got 5 seconds.
Yeah, I'll just do it real fast. And that is this. The Attorney General Sessions promised that if the Inspector General said there were irregularities, which we know, and the Inspector General's already said, they would.
We're out of time. Sorry. This is the Sean Hannity Show. This is Louis Gohmert sitting in for Sean, and we're glad to have you here. We have had a great show. You've been hearing from folks who are members of the Freedom Caucus, and I've got a great couple of guests now. Dear friends, Paul Gosar from Arizona. Of course, you heard from Andy Biggs from Arizona, and Andy is back with us because the heartbreak cut off his answer, but we also been joined by Georgia Congressman Jody Heiss. Andy, your thought got cut off. Would you mind finishing that for us?
You bet, and I'll just say hi to Polly and Jody real quick. But let me just tell you, the question with regard to indictments on Hillary Clinton and her gang, we were promised by Director Sessions and by Director Ray of the FBI, in my questioning in the judiciary, if the Inspector General said there were anomalies, which we know there were, that they would reopen the investigation, and that could lead to indictments. And that's what I wanted to get out, is that I still believe there's hope, because you should not be immune from criminal conduct just because you lost an election. And then the second question is, I think it's going to be a long time coming before you get term limits, simply because you do empower special interests, you empower lobbyists, you empower bureaucrats and staff, rather than the elected officials, and they're unaccountable. Elected officials at least are somewhat accountable, as we see. But, yep. Louis, it's good being with you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Andy. Thanks for coming on.
For all your-
and one other thought. I went to Congress. I didn't run on term limits, but I always believed they were a good idea. But
it became
clear to me when I got to Congress, holy cow, the bureaucrats are already running this place. We're going to have term limits. They need to be not only we need them on people in Congress, House, Senate, And also, we need them on bureaucrats. Somebody that's in charge has got to have a limit, because they already are running things so much more than the elected officials. That is so totally out of whack. But we're also joined, like I say, Paul Gosar, very dear friend from Arizona. I've had the honor of going out to Arizona and campaigning for him with Paul. And Jody Heiss of Georgia, dear friends and brothers in the effort. And I thought, if y'all wouldn't mind, Jody and Paul, we would go straight to the calls. We got a whole stack of them. People have been very patient. Let's see. We've got Joe in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. You have a question for Paul Gosar, Jody Heiss, and me, Louis Gohmert?
Hi, Louis. How are you?
As far as I'm okay.
I moved out of New York. I got basically taxed out of New York, where I grew up. About 11 years ago, and loved living in North Carolina. But most of my friends are liberals, and I feel like the last conservative standing.
Even in North Carolina?
Pardon me?
Even in North Carolina?
Well, let me, last conservative standing on Facebook and emails.
Oh, I see what you're saying, yeah.
I grew up in New York, so I still have a lot of connections up there. And we argue all the time on Facebook and emails, and I argue the benefits of the tax cut. I argue the benefits of Trump. I argue that Russiagate is nothing. I talk about Christopher Steele and the made-up dossier. Yeah. And one of the things they come back at me at is, how come his approval ratings are so low? And other than saying probably the same polls that said Hillary would win in a landslide, I've never seen polls saying how popular Trump is, and I believe he is. I believe he's going to be with us for 8 years. But how do I answer that?
Well, Paul, you have a response.
I think it's a great question, Louis, and Merry Christmas, Louis. It's great to be on. You know, Donald Trump has set records for raising money for the Republican base. That should show you the proudness of the president-in-chief. When you look at where he goes, it's vivacious crowds that follow him. And so, you know, people are tired of polls, because you can get polls to tell you whatever you would like to. I'm a dentist in real life, and I understand statistics and how you phrase questions to get the desired outcomes. So I would tend to tell you that with the money that he's raised, the crowds that he entertains, the forgotten men and women are going to follow him all the way through 8 years.
Well, and it point I think needs to be made. Tom DeLay told me this some years ago. He said, you know, it's so amazing. People always think, oh, if somebody's rich, they're Republican. But the Democrats have many more ultra-rich people than Republicans do. And so often the people that have started a business or in business and they've things are rolling, they're afraid that they'll make somebody politically mad, so they don't want to give too much. And he said it's a lot harder to get people who are conservative to donate than it is to get these ultra-liberal left. I mean, you think of all the billionaires or millionaires, you just seem to have a whole lot more Democrats very actively involved, never mind that they've made their billion. They're out there trying to keep you from making your billion with more and more government. But Jody, I mean, you have people attack you, even from Georgia. I do from Texas. How do you respond when you get to feeling like Joe has?
You know, we all get attacked. That's the environment in which we're living in, but you know, the truth never tells a lie. And you look at what's happening right now, in spite of a constant barrage of negative from the media and from the left, this president and those who are supporting him continue to move forward the agenda that this president stands for. The tax bill is a huge example. And quite frankly, thousands of people said it could never happen. It hadn't happened in over 30 years, but it finally got over the goal line. People are going to see tax breaks. The American economy and the economic engine is about to boom, the likes of which none of us have seen before. And, you know, when people start seeing more money in their pocketbooks and the economy growing, I think that's going to quiet a lot of the skeptics
in spite of the fact that they're still screaming.
Yeah.
And the sky is not falling in from that perspective. Sir, we have a lot of problems, a lot of issues to deal with. But I think in the long run, what this president ran on and what he is accomplishing is going to speak for itself, and the people will come along to support it.
Well, this, for those just tuning in, Louis Gohmert here with members of Congress, Paul Gosar and Jody Heiss. Have Joe from North Carolina. I tell you, Joe, I think the Democrats have done themselves a lot of damage by being as overt about how bad the tax bill is. I mean, Schumer's down on the Senate floor when we were meeting to talk about what we should have in the tax bill. And he was already condemning that we were taking from the poor and giving to the rich when it was just a bunch of baloney. You're going to see the economy improve, and people are going to find out what they've been saying about the tax bill is just not true. And I think they're at some risk. I would predict by this summer, you're going to be having Democrats wanting to talk about anything but the economy. Well, but Paul, I know you're the one that first drew me, drew attention to an issue that has also been hurting us in the area of healthcare insurance, not healthcare, but healthcare insurance, which has affected healthcare. But that back when it 1947, when
45.
They were 45, was it 45 when they were given an exemption out from under antitrust laws. So it's okay. You can monopolize. If you're a health insurance company, you can go ahead and monopolize. It's okay. And you pushed, and I think, Paul, I got up and said even more than you did, Paul Gosar has the bill we need to take up, and that's going to end the exemption for these health insurance companies from the antitrust laws. They're allowed to monopolize. We passed that with your leadership in the House, and it was over 400 votes, wasn't it?
416-7, Louis. And the seven weren't even against it. The six members from the Congressional Black Caucus wanted John Conyers to get the credit, who had carried the water for a long time. And the seventh was one of my colleagues right here from Arizona, Ruben Gallego, who just saw my name and voted against me. And he left the floor, and he had to write a dissertation on why he was really for the bill.
But, Paul, you know if the Senate would take that up, that would pass by huge numbers. So why do you think the Senate is not willing to take up this bill to end the monopolies that health insurance companies, they can, when these new energetic entrepreneurs come up with new ways to address health care needs, they can get swarmed over by a monopolizing health insurance company. Don't you think the Senate would pass it just as big as we did?
Well, it would be, because I guarantee you there's not a senator that would vote for the insurance industry over their constituents, particularly if they're running for re-election. That would be a vote that would haunt them forever. And by the way, Louie, I actually had a promise that we would get a vote on the Senate floor. And we need to honor our promises. Trust is a series of promises kept. And, we're running a little thin with leadership in regards to the Senate. So we want to see Mitch McConnell, because the unbelievable opportunities that exist, because when you have insurance companies owning the doctors, the service area, and hospitals in the area, that's truly called a monopoly. And we see prices go down and more services and more opportunities and ideas to fluctuate in the marketplace when everybody has to compete against each other. It makes a big deal. It also lowers premiums on insurance. It also lowers drug costs and hospital stays. And isn't that interesting? Those were the three biggies that won from Obamacare. If you took a dollar and invested in hospitals before Obamacare, you're 8.5 times more wealthy. You're 17 times more wealthy with insurance companies, and we can't calculate what you would be with the pharmaceuticals.
Yeah. Well, we got to take a break, but hopefully Paul Gosar and Jody Heiss will stay with us, and we'll be right back with more of your questions. Thanks so much. This is the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louis Gohmert. This is the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louis Gohmert, sitting in for Sean, and I have with me a couple of great brothers in our effort to get our freedom back, Paul Gosar, Jody Heiss. Jody, why don't you take this question from Jim from Tampa, Florida. Thanks for listening to Sean's show. Jim, You know something? I have read the Communist Manifesto. I did a lot of looking at it back in college days, and you've reminded me something I have forgotten for many years. What can you tell us about the manifesto?
Okay, in the Communist Manifesto in Chapter 2, Platform 2, if you read it, it is our graduated tax system like we have now. And what they say, it was put in place to control the people, pure and simple.
Wow.
This is why we need to go to, as everybody knows, a flat tax, period.
Yep. I love that. In fact, Jody is from Georgia.
Fair tax.
Yeah, both of the proponents of the fair tax were from Georgia. What is your thought, Jody?
Yeah, absolutely. You control people's money, you control their lives, and you control their lives, you control their freedom and the amount of freedom they have or do not have. And that's exactly what a confiscatory tax system does, which is what we have had and to some extent we'll continue to have until we do go to a flat tax or some sort of consumption tax. That's why I totally support the fair tax, because it's based on you paying taxes based upon how much you purchase and that type of thing. You know, I think we've moved a step closer towards tax simplicity with the tax bill that was just passed. It was not as simple as I would like, certainly not even as simple as the original House version, which had three categories as opposed to seven, which we have now, eight if you include zero. But it is a step in the direction of simplicity, in that, you're still going to have, they say, up to 90% of the people will be able to fill their taxes out on the size of a postcard. I hope that's true. We'll wait and see. But listen, I couldn't agree with Jim anymore. Taxes, as it currently is a setup for loss of freedom and individual rights.
And we've seen that. I mean, look at churches since the Johnson Amendment back in the 50s. Says, you know, a charitable organization, including churches, could not participate in politics without threatening their contribution. You had preachers for the first time in American history going, oh my word, we better not get involved in expressing our political feelings, no matter how biblically based. And of course, you're sensitive to that. Paul, we got 30 seconds. You want to finish your thoughts on that?
I think it's a great comment, but just take it from this aspect, is that times have changed, and we can't do a one and done, as Jody said. You know, this is a step in the right direction, but what we have to do is continually look at that progression of making sure people keep more money in their pockets, because we don't have a revenue problem in Washington, D.C. We got a spending problem, so we want to empower the people.
That's it. This is a Sean Hannity Show. We will be right back with more of the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louis Gohmert. This is the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louis Gohmert sitting in for Sean, and awfully proud to be doing so. It's nice to be here. And we have had guests from the Freedom Caucus. And I got to say, it was Sean Hannity that did more to talk me into joining the Freedom Caucus than even Mark Meadows or Jim Jordan. And I'm so glad he did. Just a great bunch of folks. And we're joined by two of those, Ron DeSantis, congressman from Florida, and also Tom Garrett, congressman from Virginia. Guys, welcome to the Sean Hannity Show.
Howdy, Louie. How are you?
Happy New Year.
Well, thank you. I heard Tom and I heard Ron. I tell you what, guys, we have a bunch of people who are calling in. Let's go to Jerry in Kansas City. Ron, why don't you take this first question?
Sure.
Jerry, welcome. Glad you're listening to the Sean Hannity Show, and thank you for your patience.
Well, thank you, gentlemen, for serving. My question, although I'm not sure exactly the potential of it, it could happen. But my question is there any way that Bill Clinton could have negotiated on Hillary's behalf a presidential pardon that nobody is aware of, that if she gets indicted, she could pull that out and use it?
What do you think, Ron?
Well, I mean, that can't happen unless it's already been issued by Obama, and there would be a record of that. So I don't think that is likely. I do think what likely happened when he met with Loretta Lynch on the tarmac, the infamous tarmac meeting at the Phoenix airport, right before the decision not to indict Hillary. I think he told Loretta, hey, you know, it'd be so great. Hillary gets beyond this. We'd love to have you stay as attorney general. And we're working. I hope the IG report shed some light on that. But they were not talking about grandkids for 30 minutes. I can tell you that.
And my thing is that her arrogance of, you know, that like none of this is going to touch her just makes me wonder, what does she know that we don't know?
Well, I think that the arrogance you saw was her believing what everybody was telling her. She was going to win. And, gee, it seems like the more appearances you make, you know, people think you wouldn't be a good president. So maybe let's just keep you away from the press. Let's keep you out of the eyes of the beholders and voters, and because you've got this wrapped up. What do you think, Tom Garrett?
I don't think Loretta Lynch has any grandchildren, and I believe Hillary and Bill have one. So 30 minutes of grandchild conversation surely would take the word doting to a new level. Ron's probably a better lawyer than me. Louie, you were a judge, but you can't do the get-out-of-jail-free card. That doesn't work in real life. Although, if it did exist, Bill Clinton would probably have one.
Well, but it's like Ron was saying, he would have had to have done that before he left office. Once he leaves office as president, it's too late for him to
pardon.
And
the thing is, Louie, yeah. The thing is, they knew the whole time, as long as Obama was president, they knew she wasn't going to get indicted. I mean, that just wasn't going to happen. And I think when Trump won, part of the reason they were so shocked is because I think they looked at this and they said, you know what, a lot of the stuff that's happened, there's now a chance that that's all going to be exposed. And so we didn't do enough in the Congress for 6 or 7 months, but we have been digging now, and the inspector general is digging. So I think the first 2 or 3 months of the year, I think there's going to be even more revelations about how they handled the Hillary case, going all the way into how they've handled this Russia collusion with people like Peter Strzok saying that they can't let Trump win and they need an insurance policy. And it's going to cause a need to really have some changes in leadership in those agencies, I think.
Well, I didn't realize how bad things had gotten until we started finding out more and more about even text between Paramore and the actual leader in the Department of Justice. It's just really unfathomable that people were taking that their politics and causing that to mean not justice, but just us. Yeah, go ahead.
Louie, I served in the military under President Clinton, and I saw the purge begin then, where they stopped having a meritocracy and started placing political ideologues in positions of power. It's obviously infiltrated the Justice Department. Peter Strzok was mentioned. I don't want to call her a paramour. These are the people who were cheating on their spouses with one another. If you can't be loyal to your spouse, then you can't be loyal to your country or your oath.
And so, Tom, you remember what they did with the guy who was involved in infidelity. They made him in charge of their human resources, like he's an expert on human resources because of his infidelity experience, apparently. I mean, it's just incredible.
Henhouse, but Louis, let me say this. The second most infamous text between those two clowns was one, I think, I represent Southside Virginia, and one text said, I'm in a Southside Virginia Walmart. I can smell the Trump voters. It's disgusting. Well, let me tell you something.
Were you in that Walmart?
I might have been in the same Walmart. I think I could smell him. Anyway,
go ahead.
You know, it's mind-numbing how there's no deep state. It's just a high-level bureaucratic state where we've had appointment after appointment after appointment, not based on merit but based on political loyalty, and this is how it manifests itself. This is the guy who said we should call Clinton investigation a matter because gross negligence has legal meaning.
Yeah, I don't think Hillary was worried about it because she figures – you know, no way she could lose, and all of this stuff they were doing would never come to light because, you know, it's just unthinkable in their minds that Donald Trump could be president. But thank God for the American voters.
People like Strzok are dangerous because there's a bureaucratic arrogance that you see with some of the permanent bureaucracy in Washington. And you know, it's supposed to be we're a government of, by, and for the people in the government work for the American people. They think that the American people work for them. I mean, they think that, that they are kind of above it all. And I think his arrogance when he was criticizing Tom's constituents in Virginia, the Walmart shoppers and Trump supporters, I think was perfectly indicative of that. I think that they have contempt for vast swaths of the American people. And when it influences your job, you know, that is a major, major problem. So I'm glad this has come out. I think there's going to be more that come out, though. I don't think we've reached the bottom here.
Well, Ron DeSantis, you make such a great point. I just couldn't believe that kind of arrogance. I still think of people that serve in the federal government, especially in the Justice Department. I know so many FBI agents around the country, and, I mean, they don't think that way, that they can smell another political supporter in a Walmart. Are you kidding me? It's just unfathomable, almost, that there were people in the Justice Department that were thinking like that. And so, Tom, I don't live in Southern Virginia, but I was as offended by that as anything I've seen.
Well, I would throw this out for perspective, though. I would wager that George III thought that the American colonists were deplorable, too. And I don't need a refresher to know who won that one.
Yeah,
we need to assert our rights. We need to serve the people and not have think the people serve us. That's the genesis of this. That's why Washington's resigning his commission is one of the 8 portrait speeches in the rotunda of the Capitol, because no person's bigger than the people they serve.
Tom, that's such a great
point.
And
that's what this Freedom Caucus is all about.
Well, that's such a great point. That's Tom Garrett, Congressman for Virginia. And that's one of the important things that's been lost. The more we see, and Newt Gingrich has made the point that if Hillary had won, we would never have known how deep the state was, how deep the swamp was, how big the snakes were that were swimming around and biting people. We would not have known. None of this stuff would have come out. So I'm grateful to be serving with both of you. Ron, what do you see that we still need to do in this investigation?
Oh, man. I mean, look at Bruce Orr. He was one of the top-ranking officials in the Obama Justice Department. He's meeting with the author of the dossier, Christopher Steele. During the election, Orr's wife was working for Fusion GPS, the company that commissioned the dossier with the Democrats' money. He needs to be brought in, deposed, under oath, because the more and more I think about this, this whole collusion narrative, I think it's based solely on that dossier. I think Strzok opened the counterintelligence investigation based off, which is essentially warmed over fake opposition research. And that's a confluence of the Democratic Party with the Obama Justice Department against an opposing candidate. We've never seen that before. That's very troubling if true, but that's, I think, where this is headed once we bring in Orr, once we bring in Strzok and put him under oath.
Well, those are good points. We got to take a break. I hope y'all will stay with me. That's Ron DeSantis and Tom Garrett, congressmen from Florida and Virginia, respectively. And, Tom, I want to get your thoughts when we come back on what should be done, because, folks, there's a lot we need to do. This is the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louis Gohmert, sitting in for Sean. We'll be right back. All right, this is the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louis Gohmert with guests, fellow members of Congress, Ron DeSantis of Florida, Congressman Tom Garrett of Virginia. And Jason is the engineer here at the Sean Hannity Show, and it's so cool when he says, stand by, and then go. All right. So, Tom, when we took a break, we had just heard from Ron. What are your thoughts following up?
Well, look, I mean, Watergate was a botched burglary by a bunch of people who didn't work for the United States government. Look, I know of one president who took $500,000 from the Russians, and his name was Bill Clinton. We have a problem fulfilling our own uranium needs, and I know who approved the transfer of 20% of the uranium that we mine in this country to the Russians, and her name was Hillary Clinton. If there was collusion, and I got to give the hat tip to the left, it's brilliant. because they've essentially accused the Trump administration of that which there's an overwhelming amount of evidence, I would say surpassing probable cause, to indicate that they actually did. So if the American people will step up and wake up, there's something to be learned here. Now, look, I'm not a sycophant for the president. Sometimes his messaging makes me a little crazy. But I do think that we've done great things. We've had 16 times the number of regulatory removal acts. The CRA has been used 16 times more in the last year than it was in the previous 30. This tax cut, I'm not going to call it tax reform, has put more money in the American people's pockets in one fell swoop than anything, even adjusted for inflation, in over 30 years. So we're on the right track, and that's referenced and sort of reflected in the fact that there was a poll that came out recently that shows President Trump's approval numbers, now wait for it, identical at the same time in his first year as the sainted one, Barack Obama. So we just need to do what Gordon Liddy said going back around to Watergate. If you can achieve, if you can overcome the fear of death, then you can achieve the death of fear. We need to do what we know is right, not worry about political calculations. That's called leadership. And I think there's one place it's coming from in Washington. It's guys like you, Louie, and guys like Ron. It's just a delight to get to work with you all. As bad as the swamp is, there are some rays of light, and we want to try to be those.
Well, thanks, Tom Garrett. And Ron DeSantis, I tell you, going back to what Tom is saying about their collusion with the Russians on this Uranium One thing and the $145 million that flowed to the Clinton Foundation, you know, something I noticed, I was on the bench as a judge back then during the 90s when Clinton was president, but it seemed like he basically perfected the ability to take any wrongdoing in which you were engaged and blame your opponent for the very thing you were doing. Had you noticed that? There are some Democrats that are good at doing that.
Well, they didn't call him Slick Willie for nothing, but yeah, you're right. Look, during the time of the Uranium One deal, the chairman and CEO, a guy named Ian Teflar, who was the chairman and CEO of Uranium One, he sent $2.3 million to the Clinton Foundation during the pendency of this deal. Hillary did not disclose that, which she was required to do per her agreement with President Obama, and that was a precondition for her being Secretary of State, that would be disclosed. They did not disclose that. Peter Schweitzer got it from the Canadian government. That's the only reason we know about that. The news out of the Justice Department that they're now investigating this, I think, is positive. I mean, we're doing it in the Congress, but we're not going to be able to indict anyone. So if there was criminal misconduct, the only place you can do that is the Justice Department. And so I think finally we've turned the corner on this, and we'll get the American people the answers. And hopefully if people did wrong, they're held accountable.
Well, that's a great point. Let's take a quick question. We've only got about a minute and a half, but Will in California, you have a question, and I'll get a response from Ron and Tom. Go ahead, Will. Yes, you're on the Sean Hannity Show. Glad to have you.
Nice to speak with you.
You bet.
So my question is, Barack Obama was guilty of illegally running guns through Benghazi to arm enemy ISIS forces in Syria, specifically Stinger missiles, without congressional approval. Or was that done with congressional approval?
Well,
and if it was the former, is that not treason? And what are you, as a U.S. congressman and a conservative, going to do about charging the appropriate people with the appropriate crimes?
Great question. Ron?
Well, so there was a big Benghazi select committee that investigated all this. Now, I was not on that. I don't think you guys were either. They did the reports. There was a lot of people that weren't satisfied with that, but that was kind of Congress's swing at it, whether you like it or not. Now, in terms of any criminal conduct, you know, that's going to be something that the Justice Department is going to have to do. I mean, we in the Congress, because of separation of powers, we make the law.
Okay,
we
got a hard break. We're going out. That's Ron DeSantis and Tom Garrett, members of Congress. We'll be right back with more of the Sean Hannity Show. This is the Sean Hannity Show. I'm Louie Gohmert, a lowly legislator from Texas. And I just want to finish up on Will's question, because it was very insightful about gun running, because, you know, we heard, there were guns that the United States, Obama, sent that actually helped some of our enemies in Libya. But there was an effort, we heard, to gather up some of those weapons we sent to Libya and ship them to Syria. Never mind that the one people they were going to ship them to in Syria kept letting them fall into the hands of ISIS. But I was so troubled after several months of Boehner not allowing us to have an independent committee look into Benghazi. And so at conference, I got up and I said, look, I have been urging you to appoint a special committee to look into Benghazi. And then I realized, well, maybe you knew about this gun running operation. And if you did, you don't want an investigation that would reveal that you knew, because then it might hurt our party the way Pelosi hurt her party when she swore she didn't know anything about waterboarding. And it turned out she did and she approved it. So I'm asking you, did you know there was weapons being provided to Libya that were being collected to be shipped to Syria before Benghazi happened? And he said, look, Louis, we can look into Benghazi without getting into any of that. And I said, answer my question. If you tell me you knew and approved of this beforehand, I will never bring this up again. I will not push for a committee any further, but I need to know. And he said, and I'm telling you, we can look into Benghazi without getting into that other stuff. And I said, you still haven't answered my question. He said, I think I have. And I actually think that he did answer my question, that is. So if that helps you, that and then after that, he eventually appointed a committee, but they really didn't get into it as deeply as they might should have. Maybe that would have exposed who did approve the gun running operation that resulted in Benghazi and heroes like Tyrone Woods giving his life for others. If the CIA had been more self-aware, it wouldn't have had to happen either. But I am joined now by a couple of other dear friends from the House Freedom Caucus. David Swikert, great congressman from Arizona. He worked very hard on getting to the bottom of what was good and what was not good in the tax bill. And my friend Ted Yoho, who was a co-conspirator in helping to get to 29 votes. We nearly got there. Heck, if all the people that had promised to vote against Boehner had done that, he would not have been Speaker as of January of 2015. But, guys, welcome to the Sean Hannity Show. Glad to have you guys on. David, we've had some talking about the tax plan, and one caller was saying, gee, even in North Carolina, where he came from before that, New York, people were just all down on the tax proposal. What's your thought about what's going to happen this year as a result of that?
Louis, and hi, Ted.
Hey, Dave.
do you remember the 1986, we'll call it the Reagan tax revolution, when they rewrote much of the tax code back 31 years ago? You know, when that passed, it had only an 18% approval rate.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
Only 8. So this is not uncommon when you do a big, complicated piece of legislation and you have the other side spend day and night saying crazy things about it. You also now are seeing a lot of the Democrats and a lot of the hard left, which just made up stories, now slowly retracting those, slowly stripping them off their website, because the American people are catching them saying, why would you make this up? And it's very simple. If you're a leftist, if you're a Democrat activist, you are terrified of Republicans and this president having a victory that's actually good for our entire society, that would actually bring growth. David, you and I talked about this last week. The Democrats are fixated on income inequality. Income inequality gets worse when your economy is stagnant, like it was over the last decade.
Oh, that's such a great point, David. And you're so good on the economic issues. I was staggered when President Obama admitted, you can find the video where this has never happened in history, but he admitted that under his policies, while he was president, for the first time in American history, he admitted, because it was true, 95% of the nation's income went to the top 1% income earners. Didn't happen under any Republicans' policy. We were trying to have policies that allowed people to, you know, earn their way and middle class go up a level and people who are poor make it to the middle class. That was staggering to hear him admit that, but that is, you're exactly right. Yeah.
If you're going to be an honest liberal and say income inequality is your fixation and passion, spend 5 minutes, look at the charts during times of economic growth. That's when it shrinks, when that the very thing you care most about on your ideology is actually most repaired by economic growth. And those of us on the conservative side, we actually see the debt bomb coming in about 15, 18 years. We see the demographic crisis we're in. You know, three quarters of all of our spending is entitlement. If you don't get economic growth, this country hits a wall in about a decade and a half. But with economic growth, really great things happen.
Great point. Well, Ted Yoho, you're in Florida.
Hey, Louis.
And listen, I see that now New York says they're filing suit to try to take down this tax bill because it treats them unfairly. I'm sure that's in reference to the limit on deduction of state and local income tax. You're in Florida. I know there are a lot of people that were fleeing California's overburdening tax system.
Sure.
And the number one recipient of companies leaving California was Florida. Number two was Texas. How do you feel about the allegations that New York is making?
No, I think it's erroneous because, Louis, we've been supplementing, the rest of the nation has been supplementing those high-tax states that have been controlled by Democratic policies. The rest of the nation has been supplementing these so that they can get, you know, get by with these write-offs. And so now they're paying their fair share. So I think that's well. But remember, when the Democrats are railing about this, and of course, you saw it on the House floor. But before I go into that, that description you gave of John Boehner and Benghazi, I was there when you stood up and said that, and you were spot on when you said that. The other thing is the Democratic Party is the party that says you can keep your doctor with the Affordable Health Care
Act. Oh, yeah, that was
a good
one.
You can keep your doctor. You can keep your insurance. Your premiums are going to go down $2,500 on average. I knew we were on the right track when Chuck Schumer and Nancy Pelosi says, if you Republicans pass this tax bill, you're going to lose the majority. Now, does anybody think that the Democrats would cheer us on for anything that would benefit our party and not them? So I knew we were on the right track, and this is a good tax plan. It'll benefit everybody. It's not the perfect plan, but it's going to be a heck of a lot better than it was.
Well, don't you love that when our people that are opponents of what we're trying to do tell us, gee, if you do this, you will leave, you'll lose the majority. It warms my heart to know they really don't want us to lose the majority. They want
That's
us
right.
to
they really
do the things
us,
that keep our majority. Well, David, what's your reaction you're getting around Arizona regarding what we've done on taxes and what people want to see us do in the new year?
Well, Louis and Ted, the fact of the matter is the three of us are in three of the states that are in the sweet spot, Florida, Texas, and, of course, Arizona.
Yeah.
Ted, what's your temperature? I'm almost 80 degrees today.
Oh, my.
David, I'm sitting on a boat in the Atlantic Ocean watching the sunset with my family, and it is
I knew somehow there would be an ocean involved in your answer.
But, yeah, I've got shorts, flip-flops on, and a T-shirt.
Wow.
Nice. I love it. But for those of us, particularly in Arizona, if you actually do the math, and also being an in-migration state, a state that's really growing, where you need capital, you need your businesses to be able to invest, we're in the sweet spot. But that sweet spot is true also for Texas, Florida. But it's also true for any state that has managed its finances with discipline and is actually trying to grow its economy. And just take one step sideways outside the Republican, Democrat, you know, the stuff we end up having to do. If you look at what's happened in the last unemployment report, the number of folks who hadn't worked in years who now have found jobs, the number of felons who all of a sudden are getting job offers. There's some really wonderful stuff happening out there, and our hope is with the tax bill, with what we have to do with regulations, what we have to do with infrastructure and so many of these others, can we keep the curve going? And it's good for all Americans.
Well, that's good.
And that's our story.
Well, as you're serenely contemplating these things, Ted Yoho, what do you say to what David Schweikert just offered?
No, I agree with David. I think that's absolutely, he's spot on. David's always been real sharp on that. And, you know, this is a victory, not just for the Republican Party, but this is a victory for the American people. And people asked me it was going to cut jobs. Absolutely not. This is going to grow the economy. It's going to grow jobs, entice the entrepreneur and the business owner, which will make more demand for the workforce. If there's more demand, that means there's more competition for the workers. Therefore, prices will raise. And we've seen that with the companies that have already come out. You know, Boeing, I think, said they were going to give, 200,000 people a $1,000 bonus or raise. There was another company that said the same thing, and two other companies came out right after that, raised the minimum wage to $15 per hour, which is what the Democrats have been crying that the federal government does. But if they leave it in the hands and give money back to the corporations and the job creators, they're going to raise the minimum wage just because of competition. And that's the way it should be in a constitutional.
Well, and it's interesting, Ted,
market economies.
You bring that up. I was hearing on some news this week that there's a report out that I think maybe Rush Limbaugh had talked about it. The report from Washington, D.C. that not Washington, D.C., Washington State, where they had raised the minimum wage to $15 an hour, and that it has done dramatic damage to to the people there, to the businesses. But the people most hurt by that were the workers. They were having less hours. They fired a lot of people, laid a lot of people off. It did a lot of damage.
Louis, there's some data out there that when you move to sort of an extreme policy, it's actually those low-skill workers that get crushed, and their ability to slowly work up in a company and take on more responsibility and just have a job and eventually move to the next level of employment is taken away from them because those very business concerns shrink.
Yep. Well, I knew you would know the answer, Dave. Yep. Go ahead, Ted. Go ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Ted is watching his fishing line right now.
No, I got my brother Tim and my wife. Timmy's a fan of yours, Louis. He said to say hi.
But thank you.
The $15 an hour, like you said, if you do that through the government, businesses back up and they go away because the most one of the largest expenses to a business owner, and we found out this when we owned our own business, is the cost of labor. And, you know, you let
guys, we got to take a hard break here. We'll be right back. If you'll hang with us, we'll be right back to the Sean Hannity Show. This is the Sean Hannity Show. This is Louis Gohmert sitting in for Sean. We have with us Dave Schweikert of Arizona and Ted Yoho of Florida, members of Congress, and we've only got a couple of minutes left, not quite that. And I'm sorry to those callers that we hadn't been able to get to, but so thrilled with the people that have been here. Dave, any parting thoughts for our listeners?
Yeah, and Louis, thank you for doing this, because so often, you know, when we founded the Freedom Caucus, you know, we were a ragtag group of conservatives that just wanted a fair chance to legislate. And as you know, there was a couple of us who were thrown off our committees a few years ago, and we sort of fought.
You were one of them. Yep.
And the neat thing is, if you actually look at a lot of the great things that happened this year, I actually think we had a really positive influence on making good policy.
I don't have any doubt about that. Yeah, Ted, final comment?
No, I agree with Dave. There's no doubt what the effect the Freedom Caucus has had on our government and for the American people. And Dave was talking about the stagnant wages. Keep in mind, under the Obama policies of the Affordable Care Act, full-time work went from 40 hours to 30 hours. So that cut people's income 25%. And we saw that across all of Florida. And the last thing, Louis, is the Trump administration and the Trump era. I think you're going to see the largest economic growth we've seen since either Ronald Reagan or the 50s and 60s when we invested in America and made America great.
Those are great thoughts. That's Ted Yoho, Dave Schweikert, members of Congress, members of the Freedom Caucus. And I'll leave you with this final thought from my late mother, who was just brilliant. She said, never argue with an ass, lest onlookers confuse which is which. Keep that thought.